This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise Quinn and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Denise and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Can you believe it? It's 2 weeks away.
I know.
Christmas is 2 weeks away from today.
It is. I'm excited.
I haven't shopped.
Christmas music. I haven't really. We are trying to be minimalist and not acquire new things.
So minimalist?
Yeah. Yes. I'm all about purging things and not replacing them with anything new. But I am excited for Christmas. I do love Christmas. So I've been listening to my SiriusXM channel holiday favorites kind of nonstop and hearing some Perry Como, and it's like great.
Nice.
And no, I did not grow up with Perry Como. My grandparents listened to Perry Como. That's how I know Perry Como.
Sure.
Hey, it's good to be with you, Dave, on Wednesdays with Denise.
Yes, indeed. I always look forward to it.
Me too.
What's happening today?
Well, we have a very special guest. I did just want to give a quick shout out because something very important happened and special happened to me this weekend. And I want to give a shout out to my son, Benjamin, and his new bride, Hannah. They were married this weekend and it was a beautiful ceremony. And I cried like a baby and so did pretty much everybody else who was there. So I just wanted to just shout out to Ben and Hannah. Congratulations to them both.
I'm very congratulations.
I'm ecstatic. But moving on to things, all things interesting, political maybe a little bit. Our listeners may remember James Masnoff. He's been on the show before. James is a podcaster. He has the Disabuse podcast, and he recently wrote an article that he and I had been talking about and thought it would be fascinating to talk about on today's show. So, James, welcome to Wednesdays with Denise and Dave on 1430 KYKN.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
It's always good to have you. You and I kind of geek out on nerdy political things. And,
definitely.
And I love that. I can't get enough of that. I've been on your podcast, and
yes,
you've been on mine, and you've been on this, so we kind of go back and forth.
And you'll have to come back.
Okay, cool. I know we were going to do like a year-end in review.
I'd
love to do a little bit of that today, too, since we are only 2 weeks away from Christmas.
Right.
What? But you recently wrote an article, and it has an Oregon connection, which is why, because I know, you know, this is a local show, so it's a little broader than Salem, but it's an Oregon connection. And so why don't you break down a little bit, just kind of give us some background on Mattal versus Tam, what that means, what the Oregon connection is, and just kind of a little overview of what this is and why you wrote this article.
Yeah, Mattal v. Tam is a U.S. Supreme Court case that was ruled on in 2017, so it's relatively recent.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a local connection to a Portland dance rock band called The Slants. And it's a really important free speech case.
So let me stop you right there, because I'm thinking, listeners may be thinking, why should I care about this case, this free speech case? What is it, you know, it's fascinating when you break it down. So, you know, why should we care about this case?
Well, there's a lot going on there that really crosses sort of any sort of political divide.
Yeah.
Because it has to do with the rights of free expression, but honestly also has to do with the right of entrepreneurship.
Oh, okay.
And because this ends up involving trademark law.
Yeah.
And without getting too in the weeds here, trademark law is in that messy area of administrative law.
Oh.
Which means that it's agencies and bureaucrats.
So it's unaccountable rules. People, basically unaccountable. They're not elected.
Exactly right. And they make decisions that are often unconstitutional, and there's very little recourse. So when this band, The Slants, here's what happened. For the better part of a decade, the members of the band, The Slants, who named themselves because they're a group of Asian American guys who wanted to sort of co-opt this very antiquated derogatory term for Asians and appropriate it for themselves. Well, they wanted to trademark this name. They were a very successful band, and the U.S. Trademark and Patent Office said because of this clause called the Lanham Act in trademark law, they were not allowed to trademark their band name because it was offensive to themselves.
Which
is basically what happened.
That's just precious.
Yeah.
I mean, good grief.
Yeah. Right.
And so they ended up going through the process for quite a few years, several years.
So what was the process that they had to go through?
Well, the process is, and they appeared on my podcast, and we talked about this in some detail, but basically they had to challenge it over and over again enough times for it to kind of jump out of administrative law so that they could actually challenge it in an actual courtroom.
Okay.
Because that's sort of the tricky thing about administrative law, is that to challenge an administrative rule, as they call it, even though it has the power of law,
right?
You have to go through the entire process a number of times. And if you don't sort of get justice that way, you have to exhaust that process before it can then go to an actual legal courtroom. And then you can, only then can you challenge it on constitutional grounds. It's pretty crazy.
Right. And how many thousands of dollars is that?
Oh, I was afraid to ask, but luckily they had a lot of kind of champions behind them to help with that process.
From start to finish, what was the timeline that they, was it 2006? They founded the band in 2006.
Founded in 2006, and I think they first tried to apply for the trademark in 2010, I believe, or 10. And so it was, 7-8 years before they finally were allowed to. I mean, you can... The law is that you can trademark your name as soon as you invent it.
Yeah.
But the thing is, unless you can register it with the trademark office, you don't have the same sort of standard in order to sue people who violate your trademark and whatnot.
Yeah.
So it has to do with sort of business protection and certain rights that a business owner should be able to have.
And a band is a business.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so they want to be able to take that trademark name, make money off it, merch, whatever.
That's right.
You know, go out there and make money with that name.
Yeah, and, you know... Before I entered the realm of history, my field now, I worked in music for a lot of years,
uh-huh.
and I still talk to a lot of musicians, and I'll be honest, they're musicians who didn't support these guys.
Really?
What?
Yeah, which is, well, because what happens is that this decision or this debate also rubs up against the Washington Redskins issue.
Okay.
And so there are people who want to, because they want to ban that, they thought they also needed to say that it's okay to ban this. And I took what was kind of seemingly unpopular. It's actually not unpopular, but a seemingly unpopular position of, well, no, you allow both.
Yeah.
Because it's a free speech issue.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Washington Redskins issue, too. I mean, we've heard from many, many Native Americans as far as what that term means and that it isn't offensive to many people.
Right.
And a lot of time. And I just have to wonder the same thing with the slants. You've got this Asian American group who wants to take back a derogatory term.
Yeah.
And you have these administrative, these nameless, faceless people who think they know better.
Well, it's also some conflating there, too, because Redskins is not necessarily derogatory,
right.
Depending on who you
exactly.
ask.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I've heard many people say it's not.
Exactly.
It's not derogatory.
Right. Right. So, but to get back to their case,
mm-hmm.
So they eventually had to exhaust the appeals process within the trademark agency.
That had to have been a nightmare.
Yeah, and my understanding is that lasted a few years. They finally got it to Federal Circuit Court in Washington, D.C., in 2015.
Okay.
And this is also kind of historic in its own right. It was they were ruled against in the 3-judge panel.
Okay.
And yet, I think it was that night or at least that week, that panel reversed themselves, came back and said, we're going to listen to your case again.
Is that something that's sort of unprecedented?
I don't know if it's unprecedented, but it's extremely rare.
Okay.
Extremely rare. And when they do that, they open it up. It's called en banc, which mm-hmm. is suddenly it has to be listened to and ruled on by all 12 Federal Circuit Court judges.
Mm. Mm.
And so it opens up the debate to this larger issue. They recognize this was a constitutional free speech issue.
Yes, absolutely.
And so they reversed themselves. They went en banc. And I don't remember how many ruled in their favor, but the vast majority, if not the entirety, ruled in their favor. And so they won in 2015.
Okay.
But then the federal government... appealed that.
So the feds come in now to appeal that circuit court ruling.
That's right.
Okay.
And so it went to the Supreme Court and was ultimately ruled on 2 years later.
So who wrote the opinion on that?
Alito.
Alito, okay.
And I haven't always been the biggest fan of Alito.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's a matter of style rather than his actual decisions.
Mm-hmm.
He's a little bit spiky, you know?
Spiky?
He's a little...
prickly?
A little prickly, there you go.
Nice.
But his ruling was completely on point. And it's really worth mentioning. So it was an 8-0 decision.
I was just going to ask about that, yes.
Yeah, because Gorsuch had just been nominated or maybe been put in, but he hadn't been there to hear the ruling, and so he couldn't rule on
okay.
the case.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's 8-0. But
Well, before you reveal what he said.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break.
Okay, great.
Oh, okay. We are going to take... See, I'm engrossed in this. I find these fascinating. Okay, we are going to take that break. You're listening to Wednesdays with Denise and Dave on Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise and Dave. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
And welcome back, everybody. We are talking to James Masnoff about this fascinating trademark case, First Amendment case. Before we left for our break, James, we were talking about the ruling. It was an 8-0 ruling. And talk a little bit more, because Justice Alito and also Justice Thomas wrote two opinions.
Yeah. So Alito can be a little bit rough around the edges, but mm-hmm. I thought that the way he delivered the decision was really strong. At one point, he gets to the crux of the matter, which, to be fair, also Elena Kagan also mentioned during the proceedings, that this is not so much a protection against what was called derogatory speech.
Yeah.
As much as it was, as Alito put it, a happy talk clause.
A happy talk clause.
Yeah, which was his point was that we're protecting positive speech. And we're not protecting negative speech. And there's something, constitutionally speaking, there's something really wrong with that.
Extremely wrong. The speech that needs to be protected is the speech you abhor.
Yeah.
And I find it very refreshing, actually, that Sotomayor, Kagan, Bader Ginsburg, that they were in the positive in the opinion, 8-0.
Oh, absolutely.
That's great.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times you have those 5-4, you have those splits, depending on what the makeup is number-wise. But to have an 8-0 on this case is excellent. I'm very happy to hear that.
Well, the fact that it was a unanimous decision,
yes,
I think, is really important. I think a lot of people, and I mean on the right and the left, I think make a mistake when they look at the court and they see it only in political terms.
Yes.
Because the truth is, the Supreme Court ends up being less politicized, often case, than the populace. They often agree more often with the whether it's, Alito and Kagan Gorsuch and Sotomayor tour mm-hmm. together and talk about constitutional issues at events. And they actually get along and
of Scalia and Bader Ginsburg and their wonderful friendship. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. So strangely, it might be strange to hear, but we could maybe take some lessons from the members of the court.
And they're not supposed to be political. I mean, you're looking at it, is it constitutional or not, basically, is what it boils down to.
Yeah, exactly.
Before we go any further with this, that's the Supreme Court that you're talking about there. Let's refresh everyone about what the case is about.
Yeah, so...
In case they're just joining us.
Sure.
The Portland band, The Slants, they tried to... It's a group of Asian American guys, and they were told by the Trademark and Patent Office... around 2010, that they could not patent their name because it was derogatory speech. Slants is this, albeit antiquated, derogatory term for Asians. And it derives from something called the Lanham Act, which is a clause in trademark law that goes back the better part of a century and mm-hmm. is a similar clause that has been used by some to defend banning the name the Washington Redskins.
Right.
And so one of the results of this case is that this opens, this basically makes it constitutional for that name to exist as well.
So you have to wonder, this is an important case for free speech. I mean, we're constantly hearing about free speech rights and, the responsibility that goes with that as well.
Yeah.
And I until you wrote about this, I'd not heard about this case. I've not seen it anywhere in any article, in any publication mentioned anywhere.
Well, I think... there was a time that the left were more vocal in their support of free speech, and that doesn't really happen so much anymore. And I wonder if that's why.
And I'm wondering, and again, I have to make that delineation between leftism and liberalism.
Of course.
They're very different things.
Yes.
And a lot of what we're dealing with and is leftism, which is more you will believe what I believe or I will end you. I will cancel you.
Yes.
Versus liberalism, which is being more open and
that's
taking
right.
in a lot of, different ideas and being for free speech, including speech that offends the crap out of you.
Yeah, of course.
Which,
of course.
Yeah, tough.
Everybody
I'm offended.
Has that right offended, right?
It's like you have the right to be offended. It's not my problem if you're offended.
Right.
You're
right.
Making that choice to be offended.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and being offended is, to some extent, a choice, is not.
Of course it's a choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Having a, you know, I used to be a person who was on the left side of the aisle, and I was
too.
Offended a lot, and I was exhausted. It's a really exhausting, terrible way to go through life, where you're constantly looking for something to tick you off, to be mad at, to be angry at, to shake your fist at.
Right.
And it's a very futile way to live, because most of what you're angry at, you don't have a lot of control over.
Right. So I wanted to mention the sort of peer review process, if I could.
Sure.
If we have a minute for me to talk about that. So this is the maybe the third article I've had published in that uses a peer review process of a sort of double blind peer review. I don't know the peer reviewers. They don't know me.
Okay.
And it's kind of arbitrated through an independent person. Mm-hmm. And it goes through a couple of different rounds. And they make notes, you know, they make recommendations. There was one recommendation, and I'll be honest, and the people at the Oregon Encyclopedia are great. Most of the recommendations I didn't follow. I personally didn't think they added anything.
Uh-huh.
But it's an important part of the process.
Absolutely.
Well, there was one note that I thought was a little bit puzzling. And you know when somebody says something and they end up saying more than they intended?
Yes.
So
that's happened to me
just a few times.
So one of the notes was that they wanted me to mention that as part of the amicus brief on side of the government of who supported banning certain trademarks included the Congress of Native Americans. And they wanted to include that because they wanted to fold in the Washington Redskins issue into this, which I thought was kind of tangential, but that's what they wanted to do. And it's like, okay, well, you know, we'll definitely mention that. But in a sort of personal note to me, this peer reviewer, who, again, I don't know who this person is.
Maintain anonymity all the way through.
Yes.
You still don't know.
That's right. But this note said, maybe you could write a few sentences about how Asian Americans think this way and Native Americans think that way. And I just thought, whoa.
What?
I wrote back to the editor right away, please get this message to whoever made that note. Asian Americans don't all think one way about anything.
Right.
Native Americans don't think all one way about anything.
Right.
And I got a response like, oh, yeah, you're right. That shouldn't have been included. But I thought that said a lot.
Yes, it does say a lot.
And more to the point, there's this assumption that because of the amicus brief with the Congress of Native Americans being on the side of the government, and because of what you often hear in the media, there's this idea that Native Americans are against the Washington Redskins name.
Mm-hmm.
But in a poll published by Washington Post in 2016, Washington Post, which is not a right-wing rag, by the way.
Right, it's not, by any stretch.
Definitely not. This poll showed that the vast majority of Native Americans are actually ambivalent or supportive of the Redskins name. So even the assumption that this peer reviewer made was wrong.
Right.
Not to mention the fact that they're racializing, you know, opinions and acting like one's opinion is dependent on one's race.
But see, that narrative is the one that seems to get pushed out through the mainstream media, where you have people assuming if you had asked every man on the street if most Native Americans were offended by that, they'd probably answer yes, because that's the narrative that's put out there.
Right.
By people who are not Native Americans.
Yeah.
And the same thing with this, with the band name. I mean, these are Asian Americans who have their own opinion on it, and I'm glad they pushed back on this. So
absolutely.
What are they doing, you know, as a result of this ruling? What's changed for them? Anything? Or are they just, you know, strike one for First Amendment and free speech?
So one of the things that was interesting that came out of when I talked to them on my podcast was that when they tour, one of the things they've done over the past few years, especially since this ruling, is that they tour law schools. And they become this sort of favorite band to tour, coming through universities that have law schools, and all of these law students come out and support them, which I thought was, well, that's a niche. That's quite a niche right there.
I like that. And I like that they specifically are taking that angle to it. How are they received most of the time? I would think pretty positively.
Oh, very positively.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Interesting.
I like to see more pushing back on this, because it seems to be there's a sort of paternalistic view up here of a certain segment that think they know better.
Yeah.
And, you know, clearly they don't.
No.
Want to take a quick break?
We can.
All right, let's, because we got more to talk about with James Masnoff. Again, we're talking to James Masnoff. He's a Disabuse podcast, and he wrote an article for the Oregon Encyclopedia that we've been discussing. But we are going to take that break. You're listening to Wednesdays with Denise and Dave on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Now, back to Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise Quinn and Dave Horn, presented by Les Schwab Tires, and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions, in the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Rich Kansky, and this segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Thank you, Rich. All right.
All right. Welcome back. We have been talking to James Masnoff. We've been talking Supreme Court, First Amendment, freedom of speech, all kinds of good stuff.
Yeah. All starting from a case that wanting to trademark your band name. I mean, gosh.
Yeah. Right. And then being told, no. We know better than you. Some administrative judge somewhere decides that they know better. And I'm so glad that the group, the Slants, pushed it all the way through and they ended up prevailing in 2017. It took them about a decade to do so.
Yeah, and I'd like to speak to one detail of that case that hasn't been mentioned, which is, and it's really important to constitutional law going forward, which is that another really groundbreaking thing that came out of that decision is that up until 2017, a trademark was seen as a form of public speech. Mm. Now, in constitutional terms, private speech is much, there's a much higher bar that one has to reach in order for it to be regulated. Public speech has a lower bar. Mm-hmm. Well, this speech said that trademark is actually a form of private speech, which
it
might seem a little weird to people that you'd think that something that you register with the government is private speech. But the idea comes from the sort of ancient ideas of trademark and copyright, which is that you belong that which you invented.
Yes.
It emanates from you personally. Yeah. And because of that, it's a form of private speech. But the fact that only in 2017 did trademark begin to be seen as private speech, it really empowers entrepreneurs and business owners and inventors that much more.
So let's talk a little bit about the ripple effect of that. I mean, there are probably people, entrepreneurs and business owners, that had an eye on what was happening with this to see what the outcome. What does that mean for entrepreneurs moving forward?
Well, there was a case actually this past year. I won't speak too much to it because I don't know as much about it. But there was a similar sort of commercial trademark case this year. This guy who has merchandise that has four letters in its name.
Okay.
And it's not spelled the way you'd think it is spelled, but it's very close to how you think it would be spelled.
Okay.
And it had been challenged and the trademark had been denied. And he won that case.
Okay.
So it keeps going in that direction. And I can understand that social mores and, you know, people might have concerns about the cultural impacts of this. And I actually am very sympathetic to that.
Yeah.
But in terms of empowering business owners to be able to exercise their free speech rights within the realm of their business, I think it's very important.
That is interesting. I mean, you can get into like obscenity laws and things like that. And how do you know? It's like, well, I know it when I see it.
Well,
it's
hard to, what's interesting about the more recent case. Yeah. That has a name that's far more controversial than the Slants.
Mm-hmm.
It was not unanimous. There were some, I think maybe two or three conservatives on the Supreme Court who actually ruled against it.
Isn't that it? I'd like to read those opinions.
Yeah.
I'd be very curious. Maybe
Does this follow into the realm of people losing their right to refuse service to people that come into their business? Is that in the same realm as this?
I don't think so because it really emanates from the sort of entrepreneur or the business owner.
Mm-hmm.
It really has to do with the rights of the person enacting in business rather than from the customer side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the ruling, the initial administrative ruling was not to protect the band.
Right.
It was to protect people who might see the band name.
Yeah. It was literally known as the
disparagement clause
of the Lanham Act, which there has a series of clauses, but the one that's been struck down constitutionally is the disparagement clause. Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So there's just so much to all this. And, you know, free speech, we're constantly talking about it. It seems to be, you know, you've got free speech zones that are shrinking on college campuses. You've got people shutting down speech because it makes them uncomfortable.
Right.
So rulings like this are encouraging, except that, you know, how do you, well, I guess in con law classes, hopefully they're talking about this.
I hope so.
So, you know, we've got other things. People, seem to not understand. There's a problem. We see this problem. We throw up our hands. We don't know how we got here. Too many people don't sort of even just scratch a little bit below the surface to kind of go back to how we got here. And this, again, comes down to rulings like this, policies, all kinds of things. You live in this area. I mean, how do you see us solving problems if we can't even get to the root of the problem, if we can't even have those conversations? Something like this case is, you know, you're having to have some uncomfortable conversations about it.
Oh, yeah.
So there are many things that we're dealing with. I mean, you know, homelessness right now is a big issue. Mm-hmm. And you've got people who want to shut down any kind of real discussion about it because of an opinion that makes somebody uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So how do you see us going forward, having those hard conversations and being able to maybe start solving some of these problems?
Well, when you come across somebody who doesn't want to have even the discussion,
yeah,
you just gotta have to ask them, what are you afraid of?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're afraid of losing the argument is mm-hmm. what you're afraid of. And personally, I just don't accept it. I don't accept that. And it becomes difficult in these times to find enough people to have that dialogue with. But you just got to keep finding those people. And they are out there. You know, we found each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we are part of this sort of expanding network of people who are talking.
Yeah.
And sometimes there are people who are maybe a little more apolitical mm-hmm. or not even apathetic, but they're maybe less involved in talking about these things than we are. But all you have to do is talk to them a little bit and they're like, yeah, you're right. You know,
yeah.
And maybe not you're right, like they agree with you, but yeah, you're right. There needs to be the conversation.
Or that you can sense there's some discomfort there. And one of the reasons I'm bringing this up too, you and I have been talking about, there's a National Review article and it's the absurd crusade against, of all things, the Salvation Army.
Yeah.
It's like there's nothing is sacred anymore. The Salvation Army is one of the best organization. It helps people across the board. Yet they're being attacked now.
Right. So I'm going to ask you if you could steel man the reason why there's criticism of the Salvation Army so that people will take, because right away, I'm like, this is absurd.
Yes.
And it is absurd.
It is absurd.
By the way. But what's the argument on the other side?
My understanding is that it is the LGBTQ community that has a problem with them. Basically, it boils down to they are a Christian organization that has a set of beliefs that marriage is between one man and one woman.
Right.
That informs their belief. They have every right to hold that belief.
Of course.
It may be different than what the LGBTQ community holds. Mm-hmm. They have every right to hold their belief.
Right.
But what's happening, instead of a live and let live and everybody just go and do good work, they're being attacked for that. I think there was a singer who said she wasn't going to perform for something unless the Salvation Army made a donation to a specific organization that doesn't support or share their beliefs. And so
yeah,
what you're starting to see is the Twitterverse again coming out, trying to make a narrative against an organization that has repeatedly said again and again they serve all people,
mm-hmm.
all people. And so now you're having the cancel culture
yeah.
come in against, of all groups, the Salvation Army. So I think that's my understanding of the controversy, and I'm using air quotes because there it shouldn't be a controversy.
Well, no, because that makes Barack Obama of 2011 controversial.
Right, exactly.
When he was still against same-sex
Hillary
marriage.
Clinton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think with her it was like 2014
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
If you don't get in line, and if you don't get in line with not only what the narrative was
mm-hmm.
2 seconds ago, but mm-hmm. right now, I don't care if I'm reversing myself from 2 seconds ago. You have to agree with me now that's that sort of illiberalism.
Yes.
That you and I have talked about.
And that you have people who claim that they are liberal who hold this and want to. It's not we can agree to disagree. That's so.
Right.
So 10 seconds
agree
ago.
To disagree. Live and let live.
That's right.
That is not acceptable.
It's not anymore. It's you will follow what I want. You will. And then again, trying to keep pace of what are the rules today? I wake up every day and the rules are different. The
yeah.
language has changed. The rules are different. And, you know, and most people are well-meaning, good-natured people. They don't want to hurt people's feelings. They don't want to offend anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't even know the rules, what do you do other than completely clam up, pull your head inside your shell and just don't engage?
Yeah.
Which is a disaster.
How much of this has to do with the fact that the left, and I know that sounds amorphous, but that the left seems to have this idea that they're always the counterculture. Even though they have the universities, they have the mainstream press, they have Hollywood,
yeah.
they sort of own the major silos of communication mm-hmm. and entertainment, mm-hmm. yet they present themselves like they're the counterculture.
And it's completely the opposite.
Of course.
I know. It's kind of weird to be in the counterculture, but we are really the counterculture. It's easy to go along to get along.
Yeah.
It's harder to step out of that. I mean, especially if you're in social media, you have any kind of conversation. I mean, we even had a conversation before Thanksgiving about how to navigate your family at the dining room table. That's depressing to me.
Yeah.
That we have gotten to the point where everything has become so political that you can't talk to Uncle Bill mm-hmm. for fear that you two are going to start throwing mashed potatoes at each other because he voted for Trump and you didn't.
But food fights are so fun.
Let's have the food fights for different reasons. It doesn't have to be for politics.
Not for politics. And that's why we're seeing the politicization of everything. And this thing with the Salvation Army, again, a group that does wonderful things, has for many, 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 many years.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, they have become an enemy. And it's unfortunate. And you see things like, you know, Chick-fil-A, and, you know, there's a lot of, you know, caving to the left and everybody caving. When you think about the left, the mm-hmm. vocal left is a tiny minority of Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
0.1%.
Yeah. I mean, so why is everybody running scared instead of just to speak? You don't have to be a belligerent bully about it. And most people mm-hmm. that I know are not. But people are so afraid to even just state really what is a conventional, widely held opinion.
Well, I think there's an opportunity here for conservatives, classical liberals, mm-hmm. libertarians, yeah. and independents. Mm-hmm. The overly politicized everything,
yeah.
I think, is an opportunity for basically everybody who's not firmly in the far left.
Yeah. And that's a small
exactly.
percentage.
This is why we don't want perpetually expanding government.
Yes.
Because this is what happens, is a politicizing of every single issue
yeah.
and a politicizing of you know, every conversation. It's a natural byproduct of an ever expanding state.
Right.
And the irony, or the sort of tragedy of it, is the people who need to learn that the most are the ones who are most engaged in this overly politicized, you know, language.
And what you just described is every issue, everything from banning plastic bags
yeah.
to everything going on with climate, the discussion on climate right now, to speech codes,
going to a football game, you know. You know, everything, because you might have players who are, you know, standing for the flag. So,
yeah, there is no safe space to be not political anymore.
That's right. That's right. But it's all a byproduct of everybody expecting a sort of government result, a government answer to everything.
I do see that on the right to some degree too, mm-hmm. more so than I had in a while, and it's very much on the left, and you see that. I mean, progressivism, that's just big government. Every solution to problem that progressives see is a government solution.
Yeah, kind of by design.
Yeah. And so, you know, you have that when we're dealing with homelessness, when you're dealing with speech, when you're dealing with the environment, when you're dealing with, tick, tick, tick down the list. And it's just I don't know how those two sides come together, because I'm firmly on the other side of that equation.
So you see it on the right. How? I'd probably agree with you, but I'd like you to unpack.
Let's take a
that.
Break, because then I will jot down a couple of things. So Great. We are going to take a break, because I'm off the top of my head, I'm like, I'm doing a Rick Perry. I can't remember the third branch of government I want to ban. You're listening to Wednesdays with Denise and Dave on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lindman & Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
And welcome back, everybody, to Wednesdays with Denise and Dave. We are talking to James Masnoff. And before we took a break, I was on the spot a little bit to come up with something, because I made a statement. I made a bold statement.
Yes, you did.
That I have seen some on the right that have been a little bit okay with a little bit more government overreach. And lucky for me, I remembered what I was talking about. And one of the ones that bothered me was I saw a lot of conservatives that were okay with President Trump throwing out a potential ban on vaping. And I know that I've had conversations with people who don't like cigarettes who were okay with banning cigarettes. Mm-hmm. And I would get into some pretty heated discussions about how, sorry that you don't like cigarettes, don't be around them. If you have to walk through a cloud of smoke for 10 seconds, you know, that's the price you have to pay for freedom, I guess. But so, and I have seen that, and I'll, and also tariffs. We don't have time to go into any of that. I have a little problem with that as well. But then, James, we were talking too. We're seeing tactics.
Yes.
So the way that, you know, sort of liberals or lefts and right have comported themselves have been different in terms of tactics, but you're seeing a change in that.
Well, until recently,
yeah.
You know, I had seen and could fairly say for about the past 5 years, when you saw people interrupting speeches and trying to disinvite or not allow people to speak.
Oh, shout down, chanting, shout down, drum banging.
It was people on the left.
Yes.
But you have these sort of splinter groups that are calling themselves conservatives, at least.
Okay.
Who are now showing up at, say, Ben Shapiro events and whatnot, and are trying to take over the event.
And that's from the right side of the spectrum?
And yeah, Ben Shapiro's not conservative enough.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, yeah. So,
wow.
So that's a concern to me. It's more of a cultural issue than a policy issue, but it's the same thing where you see members who people who identify themselves as being on the right who are now taking these tactics that had really been thought of as left of center tactics, you know, historically.
That's interesting. I mean, I've always called myself a conservatarian. I don't, you know, kind of very, very libertarian on a lot of things.
Yeah, me too.
Conservative on some things as well. Mm-hmm. I don't like seeing, I mean, the temperature's rising. I mean, you're seeing both sides. People at some point, you can only be pushed so far. And I think one of the things is conservatives, there's going to be a point where we're tired of every time we voice an opinion being called a bigot, a hater, where there's motives ascribed to us that are simply not true, or they're projected on us by people who do have those beliefs.
Right.
At some point, I mean, you know, we've been trying to engage civil discourse, which I firmly believe that we need to bring that back and to make it the most popular thing in this country.
Yeah.
But what you're finding is a lot of times it's harder to engage conservatives on that angle because they just feel beaten up.
Of course.
After a while, it's you just get tired.
Yes.
And so
it's exhausting.
We have to sort of push through that to come out on the other side, because we have to be able to agree to disagree. And far too often you're shouted down, you're screamed at. And, you know, most people, we're human beings. You get tired of that after a while and you just disengage. We can't disengage.
I think the positive thing that's happening is that the left, it keeps peeling itself different layers off. You know, people aren't left enough, including people on the left. And so they're being peeled away and they're finding themselves like, you know, maybe they didn't consider themselves libertarian or independent or maybe even conservative, but now they're like, well, maybe I am, you know, even if I wasn't, you know, by the same definition 10 years ago, because the left keeps going more and more extreme.
Yeah.
And a result of that, as we've talked about in the past, you have this sort of coalition happening between conservatives and liberals and libertarians and, you know, kind of politically independently minded people. And I think this is opening a huge can of worms toward the end, but you know, I think the impeachment is sort of a sign of that as well.
Yeah.
It's not surprising to me. I think it's positive, but it's not surprising to me that as these impeachment hearings keep going forward, national support of the impeachment has gone down.
I heard some poll numbers today. Yeah. It's gone down significantly.
Yeah.
I think people are tired of it. There's not a lot of there with this, and I think people are seeing that. I hope it goes all the way through. It goes through the Senate. I hope the process plays out. I think it needs to play out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, I think so too.
Because then he can bury him.
Well, I mean, there isn't anything there.
Or people will wake up and use their vote and change things.
Yes.
Well, that's the whole thing. Like, use the electoral process. Mm-hmm. You know, the problem with that, you know, I really admired Jonathan Turley's testimony last week, who I've been following. You know, there are some in the mainstream left of center press who's now trying to cast Jonathan Turley as this conservative, but he was a common guest on MSNBC with Keith Olbermann back in the day. He was vocally against the Iraq war. He, you know, he said in his testimony that he's not a Trump supporter. He didn't vote for Trump. He was the only one of those four legal scholars who made any sense.
Yeah.
And his point that, you know, if you're going to follow the impeachment, then do so, but don't do it for these political reasons.
And I think there are more voices. Brett Weinstein comes to mind, the Evergreen professor.
Yes.
I mean, I saw him on John Wood's podcast for Better Angels again. And you, taking out the sort of the partisanness of it and looking at it from a pure perspective.
Yeah.
And more voices like that, Jordan Peterson comes to mind from the other side. And so they're having more of those voices. Joe Rogan comes up. I mean, the Joe Rogan podcast.
Yeah.
I don't agree with Joe Rogan on a lot of stuff, but I agree with him on some other stuff. The more voices we have, the better, that are speaking truth.
Yeah. And the more voices, the more true diversity of voices, you know, viewpoint diversity is really what matters. The more we have of that, the less we have a sort of authoritarian far left narrative that drowns everything else out.
I think most Americans, once they see that, once those layers are peeled off and they look at that and they gasp and want to run in completely the opposite direction of that.
Yeah.
It's unattractive at every level to many, many people when you really drill down into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, we have been talking to James Masnoff. This has been a fascinating conversation. 1 hour is never enough with you.
Agreed.
James. So let us know where people want to listen to your podcast. They want to read your article. Where can they find more information?
So Disabuse Podcast. The URL is disabusepodcast.freech.zone.
We'll link to it.
Great. That would be great. And I highly recommend they check out the article, the Maytel v. Tam Supreme Court decision, the Slants case.
Mm-hmm.
Just go to the search engine at the Oregon Encyclopedia website and put in Maytel v. Tam.
And I think hopefully we can link to that as well. So
yeah,
people
we
don't have to dig around and look for those URLs, because they're fascinating reads. And that article was a fascinating read. And wanting to dig more and learn more about it, the more you know, to use whatever that network's tagline is. But
and
literally
NBC.
The more you know, the better. So, Dave, this has been, I always love having James. And James, you and I talk, I'm going to be on your podcast here pretty soon, which is always good. A year in review. And I hope we do a year in review on this show as well, because this has been a crazy year.
You can't take,
and it's almost over.
You can't take the title I already have, though.
Did you trademark the year in review? Is it trademarked?
It's going to be. But it's a year in review, a banner year for dumpster fire journalism is what I'm going to call it.
As long as you use that title, you'll be all right, because the other one has already been taken by
I want to be on that show.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, we have next week, Denise. And
we
And then we'll be off for 2 weeks.
And next week we're going to talk about homelessness in Salem. And we have a very special guest, Faye DeMeyer, who is out there walking the walk. She knows what she's talking about. She's taking action. She's got a plan. She's really working to build a coalition to try to maybe look at some innovative solutions to the problem. So I'm very much looking forward to having Faye on to talk about her experiences. She testified at one of the latest Salem City Council meetings. And so she is out there, putting her money where her mouth is.
Your thoughts on the city council's decision?
I am not happy with it. I don't agree with the avenue that they're going down. I think there needs to be more voices heard in this. Mm-hmm. I hope they're open to that.
I thought they had a whole bunch of hearings on it, though.
They have. They're probably going to have more as well. So it's a very, I wish there was, people throw up their hands and how did we get here? It's really not hard to answer when you look at the policies that brought us here.
Yeah, you went from camping on the sidewalk to, we're going to move them back to the parks. Oh, can't do that. Now they want to put them inside the shelters in the churches.
Right.
And the churches agree to that?
I'm sure the churches have been on the front lines of this. Bottom line is, this is a human issue, that these are people that we're talking about. But the other side of the coin is the people that also live in Salem that want to use the downtowns, that want to use the parks. It's
absolutely
a big conversation. It's not an easy fix by any stretch. We have to be able to talk about it. We have to be able to have ideas that maybe the progressive city council majority doesn't agree with. But everybody needs to be heard, and we need to look at this and get this done. We need to solve this.
Should be an interesting conversation
next week with Faye DeMeyer.
All right.
All right.
Well, interesting Wednesdays with Denise as always. Thanks for coming in and thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
We'll see you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers Wednesdays with Denise Quinn and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.